Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And on today's show, we are going to gear it mostly towards the national sports scene. We'll give you a local sports recap coming up in just a bit. But we will focus heavily on the national scene. We are on the eve of the NBA draft. Tomorrow, it gets real. The Phoenix Suns are on the clock. Everyone would expect them to select DeAndre Ayton. Once we get past that, maybe Marvin Bagley, maybe Luka Doncic. Plenty of NBA chit-chat going around, but let's begin in the NBA. News broke earlier today that Dwight Howard will play for his fourth team in 4 years. The Charlotte Hornets have agreed to send Dwight Howard to the Brooklyn Nets for center Timofey Mozgov, 2 second-round picks, and cash considerations. Charlotte was determined to get rid of Dwight Howard. They bring in new general manager Mitch Kupchak, and that's a storyline we'll discuss a little bit later on in the show. But they wanted to get rid of Dwight because he had a $23.8 million expiring contract, and I've said it once, I'll say it a million times, it's not rocket science. The current collective bargaining agreement in the NBA has put such value on expiring contracts that teams like Charlotte have no reason to hang on to players like Dwight Howard, who's overpaid to begin with, based on what he provides. But there's no reason for them to hold on to a player like that. Brooklyn, on the flip side, they're giving up Timofey Mozgov. I can understand Brooklyn has a lot of money wrapped up into that team already, and we can talk about their salary situation here in just a moment. The deal cannot be completed until the moratorium ends on July 6th. The Nets will need money to expire off the salary cap to actually be able to take Dwight Howard's salary on. They'll save nearly $17 million on the trade once we get to 2019 and the 2020 season, allowing them to create two max slots for 2019. So it makes sense for both teams, but the big story, Dwight Howard, once again, on the move. 4 straight years. So he's played for Houston, he's gone on to Atlanta, Charlotte, and now he'll play for Brooklyn, a team that he was rumored to go to when he was playing in Orlando. I believe that's where he originally wanted to go, if I'm not mistaken, before Orlando actually moved him to L.A. So that's the story coming out of the NBA. We talked about player movement yesterday on the show with James Holas. I think we're going to see some moves. I don't think Charlotte is done. They bring in Mitch Kupchak, former general manager of the Los Angeles Lakers, who just can't seem to get away from Dwight Howard or Timofey Mozgov. Kemba Walker's got a very appealing contract. Again, the Hornets, in my mind, are in rebuild mode. I would expect the Hornets to move on from the likes of Kemba Walker relatively soon. Not going to get a king's ransom for the guy, but you're going to get some nice assets based on that very cap-friendly contract that he has. So that was the big news coming out of the NBA today. Let's take a look at Major League Baseball, because plenty of day games. Earlier today, the Chicago Cubs take the series from the Dodgers. They pick up a 4-0 win. John Lester was outstanding in today's contest. The Cubs moved to 42-29. The Dodgers dropped to 38-35. LA took game one of a doubleheader yesterday. The Cubs took game two in thrilling fashion and then blanked the Dodgers today. We'll take a look at a couple of the other games that are final already. The Cleveland Indians defeat the Chicago White Sox in dominating fashion by a final score of 12-0. Jose Ramirez, third baseman for the Cleveland Indians, he goes yard for the 22nd time in the rout. Here's play-by-play announcer Tom Hamilton with a call.
Ramirez batting left-handed, and he sends one high in the air, deep right center field. It is gone! Jose Ramirez makes it 3-0 Indians on a home run to right center. His team high 22nd.
That Cleveland win today improves them to 40-33 on the season. The Cincinnati Reds picked up a victory today. They defeated the Detroit Tigers 5-3. Trevor Molly, former Salt Lake Bees man, picks up the win. He's now 6-6 with a 3.8 ERA on the year. The Toronto Blue Jays get the best of the Atlanta Braves 5-4 in a thriller. J.A. Happ, one of the more realistic trade targets in the bigs right now, picks up the win. He continues to impress. He's now 9-3. The lefty has a 3.5 ERA. The Phillies defeat the St. Louis Cardinals 4-3. They improved to 39-33 on the season. The Cardinals dropped to 38-34. Odubel Herrera gave the Phillies an edge with an RBI in the middle innings. Here's play-by-play man Tom McCarthy with the call.
2-1. Swing and a drive. Well hit right field, and that is going to untie the game. Herrera bangs it off the auxiliary scoreboard in straightaway right field. He's gone deep again. And with his third hit of the day, he's put the Phillies in front 4-3.
Herrera continues to impress. For those of you who play fantasy baseball, today goes 3-4. He has one RBI. He's batting .300 on the year. Games going on right now. The San Francisco Giants are looking to end the Miami Marlins. They lead by 4 as we go to the 8th inning. The Oakland A's are on top of the San Diego Padres in a comfortable manner as we go to the 8th in that contest as well. Still to come tonight, 5 o'clock hour, the Mariners will travel to take on the New York Yankees. We get the Nationals playing host to the Orioles. The Nationals looking for win number 40 on the year. Gio Gonzalez will take the mound. The Pirates will welcome in the Milwaukee Brewers. We get the Red Sox at the Twins at 6:10 tonight. The World Series champion Houston Astros will take on the Tampa Bay Rays tonight. That 12-game winning streak for the Astros came to a close last night in a 2-1 setback, but Charlie Morton will take the mound. Morton is 8-1 on the year with a 2.9 ERA. 6:15 tonight, the Rangers will battle the Royals. We get the Rockies and the Mets in the nightcap at 6:40. That's a look around the Major League Baseball realm. And again, coming up on the show today, heavy focus on national sports. We're counting down the hours now to the NBA draft. The Utah Jazz will pick 21st tomorrow. And we'll talk some NBA basketball. I want to revisit the Dwight Howard trade that took place earlier today. And is it a sign of things to come? Who are some other players that we can expect to be moved in the next 24 hours, 24 to 48 hours? Free agency is going to pick up on July 1st. Players such as LeBron James have until June 29th to opt out of their current contract, so we'll talk about that. Next segment, though, I do want to dive into the world of college football. If you're like me, you start getting that itch for college football during the dog days of summer. We're going to be talking about the preseason top 25 rankings, which will be coming out here relatively soon, right ahead of August action for college football. Every year it's the same story. I get on here and I complain about the preseason rankings and how they shouldn't exist, but at the end of the day they mean nothing, right? Or do they? I want to have a conversation about those. I saw an interesting article that I read earlier this week that states the preseason top 25 rankings, and again they're released by the Associated Press, should mean nothing in regards to the college football playoff committee, but do they? And there's some interesting statistics, some interesting tidbits that back up the idea that the preseason rankings actually affect the college football playoff committee more than you would think. We're going to dissect that conversation and article in just a moment. Plus, we'll give you the local sports recap. It's all coming up on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're back in just a moment. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. Castle Country Radio was excited to announce the addition of Carbon High School Athletics to its play-by-play stable beginning this fall with football. Carbon High School sporting events will air live in Carbon County on KRPX The Peak 95.3 FM, 102.7 FM in Green River, 100.3 FM in Moab, and 95.9 FM in Castle Dell. All live game audio will also be available through online internet stream at castlecountryradio.com. The addition of Carbon High School for Castle Country Radio will work as an extension to the coverage that is already being offered in the local area. Castle Country Radio has a deep presence in the local high school and junior college athletics landscape. In addition to Carbon, Castle Country Radio has also been a broadcasting partner with the Emory High School and USU Eastern Athletic programs over the past 25 years. Both Emory and USU Eastern Athletics will continue to air on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, while also streaming live at castlecountryradio.com. Castle Country Radio also serves as an affiliate to the Utah Jazz, Utah Utes, Thursday Night NFL Football, and NASCAR. All college and professional sporting coverage will continue to air on KOAL. We move over to American Legion Baseball, and yesterday the Helper Merchants were scheduled to travel to Richfield for a doubleheader with St. George and Dixie. Due to a scheduling conflict from Dixie, those games were postponed and will be made up at a later date. With the cancellation of yesterday's action, Helper remains at the top of the Southern Division standings with a perfect 3-0 league record. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Coach Jeff Cincinnaris, and he talked about the way the team has performed so far this year.
It's been a quick 3 weeks, and the kids are playing well. We did go to Burley, Idaho, in a wood bat tournament 2 weekends ago, and with our 3-1 record, we ended up being the tournament champions, which is good. We're 3-0 in our league right now. Picked up a good win against Dixie last week, and then obviously the 2 wins with Price. And you know, we're going to get going pretty hard here in our league schedule with Legion Ball.
Helper will return to the field on Friday. They'll play host to Salem Hills in a night game at the American Legion Field beginning at 7:30 p.m. Helper will then travel on the road Saturday to take on Taylorsville, which should mean an interesting couple of games for the squad.
You know, the road trip this weekend on Saturday playing Pleasant Grove and Taylorsville is going to be a very tough one for us on you know, with 1 day, and then playing Salem Hills Friday night. So three really big games for us. Could go either way. You know, we could be 0-3. We could be 3-0. You just never know. Either way, we're going to, you know, do our best and play hard and hopefully continue to get better for the summer. But, yeah, we have some really big games coming up this week.
You can listen to this complete interview with Coach Jeff Cincinnaris by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com and clicking on the Drive Time Sports link. Voltage FC will play host to their first annual 3-on-3 soccer tournament, which will take place July 7th at the Carbon County Fairgrounds Soccer Complex. The tournament, again, the first of its kind, is open for ages 8 through 17. The price per team is $125 per squad, and the maximum roster limit is 6 players per team. For those who are interested in participating, registration is now open by visiting priceyouthsoccer.com. For questions, you can email bradys8@gmail.com. And we move over to the national sports scene. We are 1 day away from the NBA draft, where the Utah Jazz will pick 21st Thursday night in the opening round. Today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll talk about the Utah Jazz, and also we'll hint to some college football. That'll be today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, beginning at 4 p.m. on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.
Take that for data.
I want to talk college football on the show today. I got the itch for college football. You ready for college football, Travis?
It's always a good time when we can talk college football.
I know we're still a little ways away.
It'll be here soon.
It'll be here before we know it. A couple of months. I'm ready to go with college football. Before you know it, we're going to be talking about the preseason rankings. And every year, I go off on how the college football preseason rankings should not exist. And I think at the end of the day, we come to the conclusion they don't mean anything. Is that necessarily true, though? There was an interesting article that I want to discuss. It was written by Connor O'Gara for SaturdayDownSouth.com. And the title of the article is there a hypocritical preseason requirement to make the playoff? In this article, O'Gara talks about teams that were unranked at the beginning of the year that had a great ride and climbed all the way into the top four of the college football playoff rankings, but ultimately came up short. In fact, since we went to the college football playoff format, no unranked team has made the final four. Now, there's a lot of variables that you have to include when you have this conversation. There's a reason why most unranked teams did not qualify for the playoff, because at the end of the day, they were not one of the top four best teams, or they suffered a loss down the stretch. I mean, there's plenty of examples that you can use for teams that probably could have been a case or did make a case to get into the playoffs, but nonetheless, they didn't get in. So before we dive into the numbers and the logistics of it, let me ask you, do the college football preseason rankings from the AP poll play into the college football playoff committee's decisions at all during the regular season, in your mind?
I think they do. You can see that the teams that are in the you know, top 10, top 5, top 6 are usually there towards the end, and I think it does influence their voting. Like, well, these teams were ranked in the top, whatever, 5, 6 at the start of the year, so maybe they get a better benefit of the doubt. I don't know.
We've had 16 teams make the playoffs. Do the math. 4, 8, 12, 16. We've had it for 4 years. The lowest ranked preseason team to get into the college football playoff was Oklahoma in 2015. They started at number 19. Now, in the playoffs that year, Oklahoma was destroyed by Clemson, who went on to eventually win the college football. No, they lost the national championship that year, 45-40. They got their revenge the next year on Alabama, so they lost to the runner-up. But looking back at what is stated in the article, it kind of got me thinking. I had to go back, start doing some research. I mean, you go back to the very first year we had a playoff. I know that Ohio State won. Remember, they went in as the 4 seed, and they actually won the national championship that year. But then there was talk of TCU, who had a legitimate gripe to get in, and I think Baylor had a legitimate gripe to get in as well. But Ohio State was picked above TCU. TCU was unranked that year. They climbed as high as number 3 going into conference championship week. Remember, the Big 12 did not have a conference championship, and they were eventually jumped. And so, I think there is something to it. And really, I think we're just as guilty as this as everyone else. I don't think we realize this. Going into a year, if somebody is ranked in the top 10, and it could be any team, throw a team that's typically ranked in the top 10 but not the top 5. Throw a team out there for me.
USC.
Okay, USC. USC's ranked number 8. Just throw that out there for instance in the preseason poll. USC looks so-so against Western Michigan. They come back the next week. They pick up a conference win. They get another conference win. Before you know it, they're 3-0. Let's say they get the 5-0. And then they finally lose. And it's a Thursday night game against Oregon State. USC doesn't suffer the same fate as, say, Mississippi State. Because remember, in 2014, Mississippi State climbed all the way to number 1. They weren't ranked. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
When they went on that massive, massive tear, they lost to Alabama and they completely dropped out, I believe, the college football playoff, if I'm not mistaken, that week. Is it because USC, and again, this is a hypothetical, this is just a conversation, is it because USC's been ranked in the top 10 and Mississippi State wasn't ranked in the top 25 at all, according to the preseason rankings, so we don't give them as much credit? We hold them more accountable for a loss than, say, USC, because then we can say at the end of the day, well, they weren't as good as we thought. Is that what happens?
I think so. I mean, you could tell from that point where Mississippi State lost Alabama, they completely dropped off where they were 1, so I think so. I think certain teams get the benefit throughout the season.
Now, the current ranking system with the College Football Playoff Committee, this is put in place, so every week it's like a re-ranking. They claim that the previous week has absolutely nothing to do with the next week, and I'm with you. I don't agree with that at all. And the reason I don't agree with that is because late in the season, you have SEC teams that play Division II squads. They beat them 50-0. Those games should not count. Yet when the next rankings come out, they're number 1, number 2, number 3, or number 4. It happens every single year.
Yeah, bull.
So you can't tell me that these rankings take on a new life every single week when you have teams playing Division II schools later on in the year, and then you have other schools who don't play in a conference championship game and they suffer because they didn't play the previous week. Do you follow me on my take on that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are examples as to, like, Penn State's another one. Penn State's another team. Penn State had a legitimate cause. I mean, this is when we started talking about Franklin being an elite coach in college football. I believe it was 2016. Penn State went on this great run. If I'm not mistaken, they lost to USC in the Rose Bowl that year, right?
The Sam Darnold Rose Bowl.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that, again, that was a team that got left out of the college football playoff. And they were also a team that wasn't great last season. They had some hiccups, but we looked past it because of where they were at in the preseason rankings. So, you know what? I give it to Connor O'Gara here. I think that this particular topic rings true, and it's maybe a bias that I don't even know. I don't even think we believe. Like, we don't realize we're doing it. I know I'm just as guilty of it. As I go through and I read this article, I know I'm just as guilty of it. Look at this example. 2015 Iowa. They lost their first game in the Big Ten Championship. That put them at number 5 in the final playoff rankings. They were unranked to start the season. They did not get in. Michigan State got in. And what happened? Michigan State lost. Michigan State lost big. Most recently, those who believe that Central Florida have a case, they're going to point to that. And again, I don't believe that Central Florida should have been in the college football playoff. They're not a Power 5 school. The examples that I have used, Penn State, Iowa, and TCU, those are Power 5 schools.
Yeah. UCF is not, and their schedule stinks, and they don't deserve to be in the playoff. I'm sorry. They didn't.
And there's always the argument. I mean, you could go back and tell me why Iowa should not have been in the college football playoff. You can go back and tell me why TCU shouldn't have been in. Look, Ohio State got in at number 4. They went on to win the national championship. I get it. Central Florida, you can't tell me why they shouldn't get in, because I don't believe they should have gotten in. And I've had that debate with several people who love the underdogs.
They're not one of the top 4 teams in the country.
They weren't. But you can't use that argument against Power 5 schools, because that's why they're divided into Power 5 conferences. They're playing the elite of the elite every week, or at least they should be for the majority of the season. That argument doesn't apply to those guys. If you're unbeaten as a Power 5, odds are you're going to get into the college football playoff. I don't believe a Power 5 that's unbeaten has been left out yet. I think there's more to these preseason rankings than what I have given in the past. I think there's more credit, or at least more legitimacy, given to college football programs that are ranked when we get the preseason top 25. And again, I think this is a fantastic article. I've endorsed it. I retweeted it. So if you follow me on Twitter at Jordan_DTS, go take a look at this article. I think that you will definitely be intrigued. And it's the middle of summer. We're not talking a whole lot of college football yet. We will be relatively soon. But you and I can agree, right? Like, have I convinced you that we are even guilty of it here on this show? If a team is ranked at the beginning of the season, we typically give them a little bit more leeway throughout the year than a team that isn't ranked at the beginning of the season. And that's not right.
It's not. It's why we shouldn't have preseason rankings.
Preseason top 25 rankings should not exist. Now, they're going to be coming out soon, and we're going to be talking about them. And regardless of what the preseason rankings say, you can look at the Vegas odds and who Vegas views as the favorites to win the national championship, or at least some of the top dogs, some major players to win the college football national championship. They have released their latest odds. And again, we don't have the preseason rankings yet. Trust me, we'll be talking about those as soon as they come out. Have you looked at the latest odds in Vegas to win the national championship?
I'm guessing Alabama's towards the top.
Bama, yeah, they're number 1 at 5 to 11. Clemson and Ohio State tied at 2nd at 5 to 4. Georgia would be 4th at 3 to 2. Michigan and Washington would be next at 3 to 1. That surprises me.
I have no faith in Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, and I have no faith in Washington.
I'm with you. Auburn would be next at 4 to 1. Wisconsin would follow at 5 to 1.
For Wisconsin, there, I have no faith in them.
Oklahoma and Penn State would be 6 to 1. Florida State, Miami, Michigan State, Notre Dame, and Texas are 7 to 1. Texas at 7 to 1, really?
No.
West Virginia at 8 to 1. Stanford and USC at 10 to 1. LSU, Va Tech at 12 to 1. Mississippi State and Texas A&M at 15 to 1. So according to Vegas, those are your major players.
You can throw out USC as well. I think USC is going to struggle this year.
Stanford 10 to 1. I'm fine with that. Florida State, Miami, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Texas 7 to 1.
All of them, Texas.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of returners on that Notre Dame squad. Michigan State, they have a lot of returners. They came on strong at the end of last season. Miami has a lot of optimism. Florida State, I'm not going to throw Florida State in that list, not with Willie Taggart. Remember, Jimbo's not there anymore. And that's a lot of the reason why Texas A&M at 15-1 is probably a pretty solid play. That coaching staff, the assistants, the coordinators are paid more than most head coaches in this country. They better perform. We'll be talking college football relatively soon as we await the preseason rankings. Fun conversation. Again, I endorse that article. Go ahead, go check it out. Connor O'Gara does a terrific job talking about the hypothetical bias that sits with the teams that are ranked in the preseason top 25. We've got a break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750.
Stop. Brooklyn-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarini on KOAL 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOYL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Going to move back over to the NBA. Player movement has begun. Now, of course, trades cannot be finalized until July 6th, but they can be agreed upon, and Dwight Howard is on his way to the Brooklyn Nets in a trade that will send Dwight from Charlotte to Brooklyn in exchange for Timofey Mozgov, 2 second-round picks, and cash considerations. So why would Charlotte make this trade? Before you say Dwight Howard is horrible, that's not the case. He's not a terrible center. He's just not performing anywhere near that $23.5 million mark that he was paid last season. He actually averaged 16.6 points per contest. As far as rebounds go, he was 12.5, so he is a double-double guy. The 16.6 that he averaged last year for the Hornets, it was the most he has averaged since 2014, his first year with the Rockets, when he was averaging 18 points per game. So Dwight was actually fairly serviceable. Mitch Kupchak, new general manager for the Charlotte Hornets, comes in, and the Hornets were actually projected to be a luxury tax team this year. By getting rid of Dwight Howard and bringing in cash considerations, they'll be about $13 million under. And so that will keep them from paying the luxury tax. Now, with that being said, why would they want Timofey Mozgov? Mozgov, who signed a ridiculous deal with the Los Angeles Lakers back when Mitch Kupchak was still the general manager there, he gave him $64 million. It was insane, right? Mozgov has 2 seasons left. So it makes sense. The Hornets get underneath the salary cap. They don't have to pay the luxury tax. Brooklyn has to take on Dwight Howard, who will probably walk at the end of the year, and that's fine. Brooklyn was going to be glued to Mozgov for 2 more seasons. Howard can leave a year earlier than Mozgov, so it works on multiple levels here. And again, I think it's a sign of things to come for the Hornets. I would not be surprised if they move Kemba Walker, who has a very cap-friendly deal. Kemba Walker is a ball player. And I think that this guy is going to find a home, a competitive home. I don't know if he sticks in the Eastern Conference or not. I don't know where he goes. But that guy can definitely play basketball. He is outperforming what he's getting dollar for dollar, especially over the last couple of seasons. Kemba Walker is making $12 million going into the final year of his contract. But I want to focus on Dwight Howard for this particular segment. If I was to tell you that Dwight Howard is a lock for the Basketball Hall of Fame, you'd probably laugh, right? It's not too often we talk about surefire Hall of Famers playing for 4 teams in 4 years and 6 teams in their career. And again, statistically, Dwight Howard has been on a downward spiral ever since he injured his back in Orlando. He was pretty good with the Lakers. He averaged 17 and 12. He was okay with the Rockets. Again, he averaged a double-double year in and year out, and he's done that. There hasn't been a single season in Dwight Howard's career where he has not averaged a double-double. However, he is not living up to the massive salary that he is getting year in and year out. And really, I think this conversation is fairly simple. Here's why Dwight Howard is a surefire Hall of Famer. He gets in, no questions asked. For his career, Howard is averaging 17.4 points per game, 12.6 rebounds per game, 2 blocks per game, 1 steal, and he shoots 58.3% from the field. He has 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards, and he's gone to 8 All-Star games. And that really puts him in unique company. In fact, you know how many NBA players in history have averaged over 17 points, 12 rebounds, and 2 blocks for their career? 2. That's it. And it's probably not even the 2 players that you would think of. It's not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's not Tim Duncan. It's not Shaquille O'Neal. It's not David Robinson. It's not Hakeem Olajuwon. Dwight Howard and Elvin Hayes. They are the only 2 players in the history of the NBA to average more than 17 points, 12 rebounds, and 2 blocks per game. And in fact, when you take a look at win share for his career, and I'm not even a Dwight guy, but these are facts, and the Hall of Fame is built on statistical performance at the end of the day. Dwight Howard's win share ranks sixth among big men. 127.3. Now, I could spend a whole other segment talking about win shares and how exactly it's formulated. Oh, but just putting that in perspective, when we take a look at all-time big men, I just mentioned five that are ahead of him, and there's only five in the history of the game. Kareem, Duncan, Shaq, Robinson, and Hakeem Olajuwon. That's it. Those are the only five centers that are above him. Centers that he has more than? Let's try Elvin Hayes, Nate Thurman, Anthony Davis, and Joel Embiid. He's in fairly unique company. And so I guess the only thing I'm trying to say with this segment is because Dwight Howard has been labeled a little bit of a goof, and I think Kobe Bryant was responsible for a lot of Dwight Howard jokes because it just didn't work out for Dwight in L.A. The personalities did not mesh. He went to the NBA Finals early on in his career, has not been able to get back or has not been able to sniff the NBA Finals since. We can't forget that it ended very badly for him when he was in Orlando. All this stuff kind of stacks up against him, but at the end of the day, when you take a look at what he has been able to accomplish, he's going into the Hall of Fame. And if you don't think so, look, time will definitely prove you wrong. I promise you, this guy's going into the Hall of Fame. He is a lock for the Basketball Hall of Fame. Basketball Reference, which has a stat for everything, has a stat for everything. It is the most in-depth statistical website you can find, and I actually lose myself in looking at the formulas and the calculations that they have for determining Hall of Fame probability. I guess there's a slight chance Dwight doesn't get in. NBA and ABA leaders in records for Hall of Fame probability. Kobe Bryant is a 100% chance of getting in, and I just throw that out there because he's not in the Hall of Fame yet. Tim Duncan's right there with him. 100% chance. There's no way he's not getting in. LeBron James, 100% chance. There's no way he's not getting in. Here's the probability, the Hall of Fame probability, which takes so many different calculations into consideration when Basketball Reference comes up with this. For active players, we'll start at the top 10. We'll start at the bottom. James Harden right now for an active player is sitting at number 10. He's got a 97% chance of getting into the Hall of Fame. Carmelo Anthony has a 98% chance of getting into the Hall. Russell Westbrook is at 99. Dwight Howard is also at 99. These are the guys that are above Dwight Howard in terms of Hall of Fame probability, according to Basketball Reference. Steph Curry, he's a lock. Kevin Durant, he's a lock. Chris Paul, Dirk Nowitzki, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James. The only three on the active list right now that are 100% chance of getting in, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki. There's three of them. Just to put this in perspective, Dwight Howard on Hall of Fame probability is ahead of the likes of Pau Gasol, who I guarantee you gets in, especially based off what this guy was able to accomplish in FIFA, what he was able to accomplish outside of the NBA. Because again, you got to consider, this is not the NBA Hall of Fame. This is basketball's Hall of Fame. And Dwight Howard came right out of high school, had a highly successful high school career. He's ahead of Tony Parker. He's ahead of Vince Carter. Okay, this guy's a Hall of Famer. I know there's a lot of Dwight jokes, and it's funny, we're talking about Dwight playing for his fourth team in 4 years. If he decides to continue to play basketball past this season, he'll play for five teams in 5 years because he's not going to re-up in Brooklyn. But the NBA is a funny sport, and I've spent an entire segment talking about Dwight Howard. I don't know how we've done that, but the NBA is funny. When Dwight's horrible relationship with Orlando was coming to an end, he preferred to be traded to Brooklyn. I don't know if you remember that or not. He wanted to go to Brooklyn. He ended up going to the Lakers. Now he's going back to Brooklyn. Mitch Kupchak, who was the general manager that brought Dwight to L.A., moves him to Brooklyn. Mitch Kupchak, who was the general manager for the Lakers that gave Timofey Mozgov this horrible contract, gets Mozgov in return. But you really have to look deep into the dollar amount to figure out why deals like this are being made. Don't look at it on paper and say, there's no way this guy's a Hall of Famer because he was traded for Mozgov and 2 second-round draft picks. Hasn't lived up to the ability or to the paycheck, but he is averaging a double-double. It's going to save the Hornets a lot of money, and they're going to make other moves. Kemba Walker is going to get moved tomorrow night. I would be shocked if he's not moved tomorrow night or at least the night after. I think this is going to be the first of many moves for the Charlotte Hornets. And Kemba Walker doesn't want to go, but I think Mitch Kupchak is going to clean house. $13 million is what you're saving. At the same time, it works for Brooklyn as well. This team has a lot of money wrapped up. Dwight's going to walk a year earlier than Mozgov would. So essentially, they traded Kyle Kuzma for Dwight Howard and D'Angelo Russell. It's a little bit easier to swallow, right? You're going to get a productive center. He's going to average double-double. And then he'll be gone at the end of the season. Dwight Howard on his fourth team in 4 years. Next year, we'll be talking about his fifth team in 5 years. Guarantee it. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll actually come back and put the final touches on this Wednesday edition of the show right after this.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM KOAL.
Back to close out this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, and why not? Let's close it up with the NBA. I was on Steve Bordstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico show earlier today, and we were talking about the NBA draft because really that's what's pushing us outside of baseball. And I'll bring Travis back in for this segment. I'm going to ask you the same question that Steve asked me. The Cleveland Cavaliers have already inquired about Kawhi Leonard. If, in fact, the Cavs were to make a deal for Leonard, would that entice LeBron to stay in Cleveland?
I don't know if it will or not. It's a start, but I just... The relationship between Dan Gilbert and LeBron James is so sour. I don't know if LeBron wants to play for Dan Gilbert anymore.
Okay, I took this a completely different direction when I was asked. And I said that it's stupid for San Antonio to even remotely consider trading this guy to Cleveland. Because of what you're going to get back in return.
You're getting an older player. You're going to start with Kevin Love, right?
I would assume Kevin Love.
So then you're going to get the 8th overall pick. I would assume that would be in the package.
Let me give you the best. I was playing around with the numbers today. This is the best offer that works for San Antonio and Cleveland, okay? This is the best offer. The Spurs would get the 8th overall pick, a 2021 unprotected first-round pick, and Kevin Love. That's what they would get. Major gamble. I'm saying it's a major gamble for the San Antonio Spurs.
Because
I don't like it either. But here's the thing you got to consider. You never get full value for an all-star. We've said that multiple times this week already. I was just looking at the possible scenarios that could work. Now, Cleveland would almost certainly have to bring in another team. And you could. We were just talking about Dwight Howard during the last segment. I could see the Hornets getting involved because, again, they want to move on from Kemba Walker. So maybe if there's a way San Antonio could get Walker and Love, you get better immediately. But at the same time, I don't know that you're drastically better. That's the way I approach this. And I guess we can take it from R.C. Buford's standpoint. And the idea that San Antonio would not deal Kawhi Leonard within their own conference. Now, is he going to get moved tomorrow night at the draft? Probably not. But the idea that Buford is going to refuse to move him in the conference, be it the Lakers, it would make more sense for him to move to Boston or move him to, I guess you could say, Philly, maybe Cleveland. To me, this is ridiculous. Right? Yeah. If you're San Antonio, you got to take the best deal. It doesn't matter where he's going. You got to take the best deal.
I know the Clippers have been thrown out there, so if you're going to move him to the Clippers, then you need to do it by the draft. That way you get those draft picks, 12 and 13. If you're San Antonio, then you kind of know who you want to draft, but it doesn't make any sense to that deal for Cleveland, for San Antonio. That deal stinks when you can go to the Lakers and get a young player in Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram or Kyle Kuzma, perhaps, and
even Boston.
Even Boston has the pieces. Yeah, why would you don't want an aging Kevin Love and then the 8th overall pick? That's and then 2021 pick. No,
I would ask for Jaylen Brown.
You want proven commodities or players? You know what you're going to get out of Jaylen Brown. You know what you're going to get out of a Kyle Kuzma.
You think? Yeah, the ceiling's much higher than what you're going to get out of Kevin Love. This is insane to me. Would it be enough for LeBron to stay put in Cleveland? It should be, because LeBron would no longer be guarding the best defensive player on opposing teams. And I don't know who you get. Look, if you can hang on to the 8th overall pick, which I don't think you're going to be able to, and acquire Kawhi, that has to be involved in it. You don't know what you're getting out of the 8th overall pick. Is it going to be Michael Porter? Is it going to be Trae Young? You don't know what you're getting there.
A broken down Michael Porter?
Maybe. That's what I'm
Young
saying. This
defense.
Is stupid. This would be stupid for San Antonio to send him to Cleveland. I am 100% against teams sending out players to a different conference, taking a lesser deal to make sure you don't have to play that guy four times a year, or if luck may have it, see him in the playoffs. I'm totally against that logic, especially if I'm San Antonio, because if you move on from Kawhi...
You have to move on because of what Kawhi said to Greg Popovich's face last night in that meeting. I don't want to play for San Antonio. I don't want to be here.
And that was the topic that we haven't really touched on. He did meet with Greg Popovich last night. He told Popovich to his face he doesn't want to play in San Antonio. And now his agent is telling teams that if they trade for him, the intention is to sign with the Lakers in 2019. Doesn't matter if it's the Clippers that trades for him. It doesn't matter. Whoever it is, his intention is to sign with LA in 2019, which is taking leverage away. If you're Boston, do you run the risk of giving up a Jaylen Brown for 1 year of Kawhi? I don't know. I mean, this is a team that's so close to playing for an NBA championship as it stands right now, knowing that you didn't have two All-Stars last year and you were a half a quarter away from getting there. This is a topic that's not going away anytime soon, and if you're San Antonio, you better start softening your stance on sending this guy within the conference, because the Lakers will give up a Brandon Ingram and a Kyle Kuzma, maybe even a Lonzo Ball, to acquire the rights to Leonard, and I don't think you're going to get a better deal. The idea of sending him to Cleveland and taking Kevin Love at this stage in his career for Kawhi Leonard and the 8th overall pick in tomorrow night's draft is ludicrous to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. You have to bite the bullet and trade him to the Lakers. They have the best deal on the table, or the Celtics.
Well, we think that they have the best deal.
Yeah, it just depends. But the Cleveland deal, no.
But the little by little tidbits on this deal are starting to come out. Now San Antonio was not actively shopping him, but they're fielding offers.
Yeah.
You see how this is evolving over the last couple of days?
You just can't bring that guy back. It's just so far gone for Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs that you don't want that hangover going through the season with Kawhi and the relationship.
Here's the other funny tidbit, right? So they don't want Lonzo Ball because of his father and the circus that comes with Lonzo.
Then you can take Ingram and Kuzma.
Well, even at that, if you don't trade Kawhi, you think LaVar Ball is a headache?
Yeah.
Everywhere Kawhi Leonard goes, he's going to get questions about if he's coming back or not, or what he's going to get traded, or what his relationship is with the team. Look, we just talked about Dwight Howard. It's taking a very similar turn to what happened to him in Orlando. You do not want that distraction. You welcome in LaVar Ball before you have a distraction like that. I don't think there's any way around it. I think he's got to go to LA. And I'll tell you, if he isn't moved before free agency, and Paul George does in fact sign with LA, this changes the dynamic, because Paul George and his agent said that he would sign with the Lakers in 2018. If he actually goes through with it, I think it sends a message to other teams saying, well, these guys that are calling their shots, they're really calling their shots.
Yeah, they're not bluffing. They're going to where they want to be, and we're just going to wait for that first domino to fall, I guess, with LeBron. So
I think it's LeBron. Maybe tomorrow San Antonio moves on. I don't know. We'll wait and
you
see.
You move on before the draft so you know what players that you kind of want to pick and choose from.
I agree. Out of time on this edition of the show. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. We will talk a lot of local sports. I know Willie Ellington of the Price American Legion baseball team is going to join us. We have a whole lot of local sports on tap tomorrow, so join us then. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Have a terrific Wednesday. Be safe. We are out.